Welcome to KUI News, the collaboration between the University of Idaho's own student-operated radio station, KUI, and its editorially independent student newspaper, The Argonaut. Stay up to date on everything going on your campus and beyond every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Once in the morning at 9:30 a.m., and once after you're actually awake at 3:30 p.m. Welcome to KUI News for Friday, April 12th, 2013. I'm Dylan Brown. Upcoming on today's broadcast, Matt Maugh previews the final opportunity to hear from experts on both sides of the Keystone XL pipeline debate right here in Moscow. Katie Sword has part one of her investigation of Idaho's dated rape laws, examining the law's constraints at present in the state. In sports, Stefan Wiebe previews track and field's battle for pies and donuts in the War 6 dual meet. Brian Marceau has an update on the WAC Player of the Year Kyle Barone's move to the professional ranks. Theo Lawson has a report on the new linebackers coach for Vandal football. From RAR, our weekly arts and entertainment insert, Molly Spencer has a mixtape of the best tracks from Frank Ocean's Channel Orange album. Lastly on KUI News, Kason Christensen has our view on why the Idaho rape laws are in desperate need of a rewrite. But first, this news. Gas prices go down, people are happy. Gas prices go up, people are unhappy. But do they care where that fuel comes from? The organizers of a debate on the controversial Alberta tar sands project think so, and Matt Maugh has this story on the speakers coming soon to Moscow.
People from President Obama to regional environmental groups are taking sides on the oil sands mining operations in Alberta, Canada. Jacob Magelin, chair of the Washington-Idaho border section of the American Chemical Society, helped arrange a three-part speaker series to inform the community on this rising environmental issue. The first two have passed, but the final presentation will occur at 6 p.m. April 17 at the University of Idaho Agriculture Sciences Building Auditorium. Magelin said the Alberta oil sands seem to have reinvigorated a lethargic North American attitude on global warming. Magelin said, "The climate movement has always been going, but it hasn't been in mainstream news in a long time, and I think in the last year or so this pipeline has revived it. It's on the president's table." The Keystone XL pipeline, a transportation system for Alberta's crude oil proposed by North American energy company TransCanada, will stretch from Alberta to Nebraska pending Obama's presidential permit approval, with an extension into Texas upon construction. According to TransCanada, the system could pump 830,000 barrels of oil daily to refineries across the American Midwest and Gulf Coast. Magelin said the oil sands mining industry creates a significant climate change concern. The cost in natural gas to access the oil is high, he said, and the mining procedures release a notable degree of carbon from the earth. Magelin said, "Compared to what's mined in the Middle East, or what was mined in Texas, this is a much more energy-intensive project." Don Thompson, executive advisor for Canadian Oil Sands Limited, will offer a pro-mining perspective at the April 17 lecture. Thompson said the question isn't whether we use oil, but from where we obtain it, and the United States' alternative options, Iran, Iraq, Venezuela, and others, come with more questionable environmental records than its northern neighbors. Thompson said, "You're better off getting oil from Canada, whose business practices, human rights legislation, and environmental regulations are similar to those in the U.S. He said a pipeline is the safest way to transport the oil, and the industry provides the U.S. with multiple economic benefits, cultivates energy security, and is environmentally manageable. He said he wants the community to see how important balance is to every issue. Magelin said while the Alberta oil is environmentally dirty, he doesn't have a particular opinion on the oil sands because he isn't sure where the line should be drawn. His organization can act as an arbiter for this conversation, he said, because it wants to provide education to the public with credible, respected representatives from all sides of the argument. Magelin said, "Even though we're a pretty small community, arguably in the middle of nowhere, we're getting some authorities on this issue. So it'd be good to have an audience to hear them out." For KUOI News, I'm Matt Maugh.
The trial of former University of Idaho student Jesse Veerstra was a rare case of a successful prosecution in a state with laws advocates for reform call out of date. With a look at how Idaho courts handle rape cases at present, Katie Sword has this first part of her two-part story.
After a three-day trial and less than 4 hours of jury deliberation, former University of Idaho student Jesse Veerster was found guilty on one count of felony rape. What started in October 2012 was finally over. But the question still remained. Veerster had faced two prior accusations of sexually motivated battery against him during his time at UI. Both dropped to misdemeanors and eventually dismissed. He paid $240 plus $137.50 in court costs. Michelle Evans, senior deputy prosecuting attorney for Latah County, said the issue doesn't lie with prosecution, but with Idaho law. Latah County prosecutor Bill Thompson said when it comes to sexual assault laws, Idaho's are antiquated.
Idaho doesn't have a sex crime that's just lack of consent. We have to prove either force or threats of force, or that the person is incapable of giving consent because they're unconscious, for example.
Thompson said as a prosecution, they have no control over Idaho statutes, which can be frustrating.
The legislature sets all those rules for us, and so we have to screen our cases knowing what limitations the legislature has put on whether it's criminal or not, which is very frustrating for us. Because it's easy to see that if somebody has sexual intercourse with another person and that other person didn't consent to it, said no, that's not right. That's not necessarily criminal in Idaho.
In cases such as Veerstra's, forcible rape needs to be proven. This includes proving there was penetration and resistance that was overcome by force or violence. But Idaho's statute does not define resistance, which Evans said can be an issue. However, on April 1st, in the state of Idaho v. Russell Jones, the Idaho Supreme Court revised the division of resistance, deciding that verbal resistance is sufficient to substantiate a charge of forcible rape. Chief of Police David Duke said this will set the precedent for further rape prosecutions. Despite this recent definition revision, Thompson said refining the rape statute isn't something he sees happening in the future. This is especially due to the predominantly conservative male legislature, which is not a receptive forum for the kinds of changes they need. Thompson said sex crimes are something people are uncomfortable dealing with, which means people are uncomfortable even making reports. When reports are made, it's even harder to get a conviction. Thompson said each case is driven by its own unique facts.
And I can remember over the past handful of years, two cases where I got rape convictions. One was a court trial where it was just the judge hearing the evidence. The other was a jury trial. The majority of the sexual assault cases are resolved by plea negotiations. Mm-hmm. But really the strength of each case kind of rests on its exact facts.
Evan said recently she's tried two rape cases, aside from the Veerster case, one in December where the accused was acquitted.
Before that, I think we had a rape case where the girl was unconscious and somebody walked in on him. And the jury still didn't find that he committed rape. They found he committed attempted rape.
Mm-hmm. Aside from changing legislation, Evans said the key to successful conviction lies in the report. She said victims need to report early, get a medical evaluation, and help the police preserve evidence. Duke said the delay in report, which can lead to a lack of physical evidence to collect, is what inhibits their ability to prosecute rape cases. He said this is the case with the first two reports made against Veerstra in August 2011. Duke said the first two reports were made about a week after the incidents occurred. He said usually there's a delay when an acquaintance rape is reported, but when it's a stranger rape, it's usually reported immediately. He said without physical evidence, such as a medical exam, these reports can be hard to corroborate. He said sometimes there are witnesses, but when there's only a few people involved, that's when credibility comes in, whose statement to believe.
The handful of security officers regularly circling the University of Idaho campus have changed their shirts and the dynamic of campus security since arriving in Moscow in 2010. Instead of sticking out like a sore thumb in highlighter green, the employees of private security company Allied Barton now wear Vandal Gold, a symbol of their integration into the campus community. Dean of Students, Bruce Pittman.
It took them a year or so to get acquainted to campus, get acquainted with our needs, and build relationships principally with Moscow PD. But also with other stakeholders on campus. And I think that relationship has become positive and useful.
When Allied Barton was brought in 3 years ago to supplement the security efforts of the Moscow Police Department, Pittman said many in the community wondered if unarmed security personnel with no law enforcement powers were necessary. While the largest American-owned security firm provides protection to the campuses nationwide, including Stanford, Yale, and the University of Chicago, UI acclimated slowly to the folks in fluorescent shirts. However, by identifying themselves as campus security and not Allied Barton, reaching out to community members and responding to university instruction, they are now a campus fixture.
Allied Barton provides another important layer of safety, another layer of information that we might not otherwise have.
For Executive Director of Public Safety and Security Matt Dorschel, who acts as the primary liaison between Allied Barton and UI, campus security is more a wagging finger than a billy club. Moscow police continues to handle criminal activities and roughly the same number of calls, but the perception of an increased presence has made campus more secure. Lieutenant Dave Lemitz, who oversees the campus division of MPD, said we still deal with the same things as before. The biggest thing that's changed is more eyes out there. The visible deterrence of yellow shirts roaming campus has helped curtail graffiti and other activities that damage property, like slacklining on university trees. Patrice McDaniel, Assistant Director of Emergency Management and Security Services, said campus is just really clean thanks to their presence. Depending on the day, anywhere from 1 to 5 full-time or part-time Allied Barton employees are walking campus. Most of them are UI alums, and they act as a buffer between students and Moscow PD. McDaniel said they act as a conduit between the students and the Moscow police to avoid police involvement for things that don't require police attention. McDaniel and Dorschel have both noticed an effect, especially in the Greek community. Campus security has networked with the Greeks through in-house presentations to destigmatize their presence and help reduce open container violations and minor in possession tickets on Greek Row. Dorschel emphasizes Allied Barton officers use common sense instead of strict policy enforcement to help deter questionable activities. Campus security also provides a variety of services to UI students, including help with car problems, jump starts, and flat repair, and with the Safe Walk program, something Pittman said he appreciates very much.
We had worried for many years about providing some kind of nighttime safety escort or safety walk experience. And when Allied Barton came on, they said, yeah, we'll do that. We'll work that out. And it was just like this big problem that we had been wrestling with on 2 or 3 occasions. Went away.
For KUI News, I'm Dylan Brown. Album called Mala from Devandra Barnhart, American by way of Argentina. He's today's featured artist on KUI News, and that track was called Golden Girls. First up in sports, donuts are a pretty good incentive for just about any occasion. Even highly trained athletes on a specific diet regimen can't resist their allure. With a preview of a special meet this weekend for Idaho Track and Field that has a very sweet prize for the winner, Stefan Wiebe filed this report.
It's not every week that track and field athletes get to compete in a meet where they win pies and donuts for their victories instead of trophies and medals. On Friday, the Vandal track and field teams compete in the unique War 6 regional dual meet at Spokane Falls Community College. The meet pits teams from Idaho, Oregon, and Montana against teams from Washington in a regional battle complete with barbecues and food prizes. Idaho senior Joseph Charles commented on the meet.
It's kind of a low-key meet, but then again, you're going to be a lot of competition there. But it's going to be more fun to, because we're all fighting for food right now. It's just for throwers, we're fighting for food. And we all want that pie and those donuts.
In addition to regular prizes, the War 6 is also scored differently than regular track and field meets. Instead of earning points for their teams, athletes score points for their region. The two regions represented are Washington against the combined forces of Oregon, Idaho, and Montana. The original War regional dual meet just featured schools from Washington and Oregon, but Idaho coach Wayne Phipps said the meet has grown to make the competition more balanced. Since the meet is hosted in Washington, it always features more Washington schools than schools from the other states. The War 6 is also the first meet of the outdoor season that will have the whole Vandal squad competing at one location. The previous meets featured only small Vandal squads or had athletes competing in separate locations. Idaho senior Christine Leonard commented on competing with the whole team.
It's fun getting to see everybody else compete because usually most of the time you're looking at everybody else practicing, but it's definitely something different when you can, you know, even when you're on area, you can just still see the runners going by and cheer for people and stuff like that, so it just makes it a little bit more special.
Phipps said the War 6, while featuring many teams, acts as a low-profile meet between the prestigious Sun Angel Classic from last week and the Mount Sac Relays of next week. One Vandal group to keep an eye on is the Javelin Throwers. The Javelin Throwers do not have their event during the indoor season, so they get right into action during the outdoor season. The War 6 offers another opportunity for them to improve early in the season. For KUI News, I'm Stefan Wiebe.
Kyle Barone's college career ended bittersweet. He was voted WAC Player of the Year, but the Vandals' season ended in the first round of the WAC tournament. However, for a player of his ability, the pros await. With a look at Barone's progress thus far, Brian Marceau has this update.
If you're a college senior with NBA aspirations, like the University of Idaho's own Kyle Barone, the most important 3 months of your life began on April 10th in Portsmouth, Virginia, at the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament. Though it boasts alums like Earl Monroe, John Stockton, and Scottie Pippen, the PIT is no longer the place to see the next Kobe Bryant or Kevin Durant. As blue-collar professional basketball goes, the PIT is probably its epitome. Eight teams of eight college seniors, all with resumes more than 99% of the basketball-playing world envies, will perform drills, but most importantly, play a handful of games before NBA, NBDL, and international scouts. All 64 seniors seeking to leave an impression they have likely not yet made, the reason they came to Portsmouth in the first place. Most occupations have annual career fairs anyone can attend in any region as often as you please. For all the luxuries of professional athletics, multiple career fairs is not one. If you're playing in Portsmouth, chances are you're not yet on the radar of many teams. So you're not playing for a spot in the 2013 NBA draft yet, but for the chance to earn invitations to individual workouts, which mostly take place in groups, and to June's NBA draft combine in Chicago. Most participants enter and exit as NBA long shots, though success stories like Kyle O'Quinn from 2012, a second-round pick of the Orlando Magic who earned a roster spot, still exist. Going into PIT, Kyle Barone fits the profile for its average participant. NBADraft.net and DraftExpress.com have yet to create Barone profile pages. Few fans outside the Western Athletic Conference have heard his name, and no national publications covering PIT mention him as a player to watch. According to Barone, he has no individual workouts scheduled prior to PIT's commencement. As far as 6'10 Conference Players of the Year go, it's impossible to beat Barone's national invisibility. There's reason to believe his anonymity will not last. A potential critique of Barone's NBA potential has points he'll need to dispel at PIT. Less perceived potential due to his age, 23. At 6'10 and 220 pounds, according to ESPN.com, he'll have to prove he's both tough and athletic enough for NBA posts. Though not a fault of his own, no collegiate evidence of three-point range exists, and posts are increasingly expected to make deeper and deeper jump shots. Despite these questions he'll have to answer, Barone more than earned his PIT invite. He has the size of an NBA power forward or overseas center and improves statistically each season, with the biggest jump coming during his senior season. Barone upped his points per game averages from 12.9 to 17.2 and his rebounds per game from 8 to 9.7, despite putting up only 1.2 more shots and playing only 1.2 more minutes per game. His free throw percentage went from 63.9 to 78.2%, while his attempts went up almost 2 per game. In short, Barone became a dramatically more efficient player, ranking 14th in ESPN.com's player efficiency rating, ahead of future lottery picks like Indiana's Victor Oladipo at 18, UNLV's Anthony Bennett at 24, Georgetown's Otto Porter at 25, and Kentucky's Nerlens Noel at 39. A self-described late bloomer, Barone looks like a player with some untapped potential who remains anonymous more for where he played than anything else. Teaming with Texas A&M's Elson Turner, UNLV's Anthony Marshall, Miami's Durand Scott, Oregon's E.J. Singler, Indiana's Jordan Holes, Ole Miss's Murphy Holloway, and Clemson's Devin Booker, Barone's future lies in the outcome of a job fair with stakes few can comprehend and fewer will ever experience. We wish him the best. From KUOI News, this is Brian Marceau.
The transition from Coach Rob Akey to Paul Petrino has been one developing throughout spring football and continues with the appointment of a new linebackers coach. Theo Lawson has that story.
When Idaho coach Paul Petrino assembled his staff in December, he assembled one that had experience, youthful energy, and familiarity with Moscow and the Pacific Northwest. Mike Anderson might be a check in all three of those columns. The former Idaho linebacker and Lewiston native was one of Petrino's first hires, tapping Anderson to oversee his linebackers. Prior to returning to Northern Idaho, Anderson spent 4 years as a graduate assistant and defensive assistant under Steve Sarkisian at Washington. It's a lot of fun. It's fun to be back here. A lot of memories. But at the same time, it's good to come back and work hard and take the next step and every day try to get better with the team, Anderson said. Anderson had been working his way up the coaching ladder at Washington, assisting with game planning and strength training during the 2012 season. But when the call from Petrino came, it proved too good to pass up. I was very excited. I'd heard a lot about Coach Petrino throughout my career. I knew a lot about him, and for him to want me to be on his staff was a great honor, Anderson said. Also, to be at my alma mater was very exciting. Anderson returns to Idaho with the challenge in front of him, not only because the program has only won 3 games the last 2 seasons, but because the linebacking core doesn't return a single starter. Junior college transfers have filled the void during spring ball, with competition heating up as every starting spot is up for grabs. It's been awesome, a lot of competing. I love the competition. Coming from junior college, the competition is way different, but it feels good to be over here, junior Eric Tuipoloto said. Tuipoloto has been one of the standout performers for Idaho at the position this spring, amassing 6 tackles in Idaho's latest scrimmage. He'll likely garner some playing time at outside linebacker this fall. Returners at the position, such as Matt Willis, have had to step up from their reserve roles last season, now competing for starting spots. Willis said it hasn't been that much of a challenge meshing with the new guys, despite the competition. It really hasn't been very challenging for me with the new guys. Everything has been great. We fit in very well. We all hang out afterward. From that aspect, not really much, Willis said. For KUI News, I'm Theo Lawson.
Go so wrong, and everywhere we turn, they're playing our song.
Never Seen Such Good Things, a second track from today's featured artist, Devendra Barnhart, from his new album, Mala. Frank Ocean won a Grammy and was nominated for a bunch of other awards in this, his breakout year, but ultimately, he is just some plain good old R&B. With her favorite 4 tracks from Ocean's Channel Orange album, here's Molly Spencer.
Here's a mixtape for Frank Ocean's album Channel Orange. If there's one thing Ocean is good at, it's wooing the ladies. His album Channel Orange gained its title because the color orange was that which he associated with his first summer he fell in love.
No, I don't like you, I just thought you were cool enough to kick it. Got a beach house I could sell you in Idaho. Since you think I don't love you, I just thought you were cute. That's why I kiss you. Got a fighter jet, I don't get to fly it, though I'm lying down thinking about you. Ooh, no, 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 I've been thinking about you. You, no, no.
Thinking about you. No, I don't like you, I just thought you cool enough to kick it. Got a beach house I could sell you in Idaho. No, I don't love you, I just thought you were cute, that's why I kissed you. Sounds to me like he does love her, but he should probably tell her there aren't any beaches in Idaho.
Sweet life, sweet life, sweet pie.
high. You've had a landscaper and a housekeeper since you were born.
Sweet Life. I mostly love this song because Charlie Hunter, bassist who specializes in funk and jazz, rips it up on his bass from start to finish. I also somewhat agree with Ocean's idea of, why see the world when you've got the beach? Listen to the whole song through. It's worth Hunter's finishing solo.
Since they replied, what is your woman? Is she just a container for the child? That soft pink batter, cotton candy, Majin Buu.
Pink batter. This groovy beat goes well with the sound of Ocean belting about how nothing matters, when suddenly, Andre 3000 swoops in with his face-melting, sexy voice and I forget all about Frank Ocean.
A million, 1 million, 200 more will never do. Too many bottles of this wine we can't pronounce. Too many bowls of that green, no lucky.
Super rich kids. Too many rides in Daddy's Jaguar, too many white lies and too many white lines. Super rich kids with nothing but loose ends, super rich kids with nothing but fake friends. Well, that's a harsh reality, but I would expect nothing less from Ocean and Earl Sweatshirt, who are also both part of the group Odd Future. For KUOI News, I'm Molly Spencer.
Jesse Veerstra, a former UI student, was convicted of rape last month. But with Idaho's existing statutes involving this heinous crime, this kind of conviction is rare. With our view on why the state of Idaho needs to change the rape laws currently on its books, here's Kason Christensen.
The circumstances and details leading up to every rape crime vary, but without consent, it is always a crime. Idaho's current rape law is tone-deaf with little regard for the differences in individual cases. All forms of rape are contained under the same statutory umbrella. Statutory rape, that is, sex with a minor, is also lumped with all other rape crimes. Other states have developed laws to address the variations of sexual assault crimes. The Washington rape legislation has 41 sections that divide rape into several different categories, and then 3 degrees within each of those categories. Idaho's legislation has 10 sections defining 3 types of rape: rape, male rape, and spouse rape. In order to get a conviction in Idaho, prosecutors in all rape cases must prove that there was penetration and resistance overcome by force or violence. Proving this is difficult, and most cases that should be rape are tried under different charges. The Idaho Supreme Court did take a step forward recently with its ruling that verbal resistance counts as resistance in a rape case, but the prosecution still has to find a way to prove resistance, which is problematic. This leads to fewer prosecutions. In turn, victims see they cannot get redress from the courts, and so they do not report rape. When rape is reported, convictions are few and far between. Former University of Idaho student Jesse Veerstra, who was recently convicted of rape, was charged twice before with sexually motivated battery, both of which were further reduced to disturbing the peace. Idaho's antiquated laws need to be updated. The national stigma against reporting and prosecuting rape makes it hard enough to get a conviction, and Idaho's laws make it even more difficult. Each legislative session, a UI student spends time in Boise lobbying for UI's interests. These lobbyists are in a unique situation to influence lawmakers through student perspective, which could eventually lead to a change in the rape laws. Students, faculty, and staff can make legislators aware of the importance of changing these laws by calling and writing to their state representatives. It's time for Idaho to change, but change will only come if we speak up. For KUOI News, I'm Kason Christensen.
Last track from Devendra Barnhart, today's featured artist on KUI News, and his new album, Mala. That song was called Your Fine Petting Duck, and you can hear it here, along with all the top tracks from the world of college radio, right here on 89.3 FM in Moscow. That's going to do it for KUI News for Friday, April 12th, 2013. But the Argonaut doesn't stop here.
Check out your student newspaper
on Facebook,
Twitter,
and Pinterest.
Also, be sure to check out the rest of Student Media's outlets, including...
RAR.
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 RAR is the Argonauts Weekly Arts and Entertainment tab that showcases everything from reviews to quirky features. Find RAR inside the Argonaut every Friday and online at uiargonaut.com, as well as on Facebook and Twitter by following at RAR Weekly.
Can't get enough Argonaut photos? Look at online exclusive photos and more on our Facebook page at facebook.com/uiargonaut.
Hangry? Hungry? Parched? Craving something sweet? Visit the Argonauts food blog, Crumbs, at uiargonaut.com/crumbs. Like Crumbs on Facebook and follow at UICrumbs on Twitter and Pinterest for new recipes every week.
To stay up to date on everything Idaho athletics, check out Vandal Nation at thevandalnation.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/IdahoVandals, and certainly check us out on Twitter at Vandal Nation.
And don't forget about the University of Idaho student magazine.
Leprechauns are said to hide pots of gold at the ends of rainbows. If you're lucky, you'll find one pot in your life. Blot comes out twice a semester, and it's as close as your nearest newsstand or your computer. Go with the sure thing. Go with Blot. Find your pot of gold at blot.uidaho.edu.
I want to thank everybody for listening to KOI News. I'm Dylan Brown. Have a great weekend.